Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
The Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proud to use Audio-Technica headphones for our show. Audio-Technica has a great rebate going on with their 40 series microphones, where if you purchase a 40 series microphone, you get a free M50 studio headphones. So check out their website, www.audiotechnica.com, for more information, audio-technica.com. And welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiasts. Welcome, Jeff.
Hey, welcome, Scott. We got a great show tonight, and I think we're giving away something today.
Yeah, actually, we have you have, for anyone listening live, you have about half an hour, 20 minutes to half an hour, to still sign up by going to our website, www.flowguitarenthusiast.com, to sign up for an Eminence Governor speaker. So we'll be giving that away. It's a random drawing, so if you can sign up before we do that, when you hear the rock and roll from our good friend Mike Matthews from Electroharmonics, we will be ready to give it away. So let me tell you about some of the other things going on. After this giveaway, the next giveaway will be a Wampler pedal, the Slow Distortion, and it's autographed by Brian Wampler. So very cool.
We'll be doing
some demos of that, and we'll be having him on to tell us about what he announced at his Summer NAMM for a brief moment. What's been going on with you, Jeff?
Oh, been working on one of my, I've been retubing my amps, my preamp tubes. I was doing a session, and all of a sudden, just that crazy buzz and noise. So I've been working on that. I did some stuff for the USA Girls, some feedback guitar and backwards stuff, and it was kind of fun to do. So they're coming out with some new songs with it, and I'll be doing a little blurb on our website about it with pictures.
Very cool. Yeah, and for anyone that might have checked out my YouTube channel, I had just posted a demo of the Atlas Stands micro amp stand. So I did kind of a demo slash review of that. So check that out on my YouTube channel.
Yes, a very good stand. I remember I used that live, and it's a really nice, solid stand.
It is. It's
very
super,
solid.
Super cool.
So without further ado, I'm really excited tonight. We have some great stuff, great guitars, great pedals, great amp, just gear all over the place. A very, very special guest, Jason Sine, studio guitarist, and, well, just an amazing guitarist. And let's just get right in it. Jason, welcome to the show. It's totally a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Scott.
You're welcome.
Anyway, let's just get right into it. I just want to talk a little bit about your studio gigging. You've played with several different people, and you've done different things besides just straight, like, album type of sessions. You've done, like, TV commercials. Yep. And in some film work.
Yeah, actually, I started, my first recording sessions were all jingles. My uncle was a pretty big jingle guy in L.A. in the 70s, and I was kind of his gopher. And as soon as I was good enough to play bass or guitar in his commercials, he didn't have to pay me. So that's kind of how I got into it.
What was your most memorable session that just blew you away? Who did you work with that you just really
like ever or
ever
or from that era? Well, ever I would say probably Jerry Lee Lewis, getting to play in the room with him with his band. That was pretty crazy. You know, that was 5 days of heaven, you know, up at Sunset Sound, just, you know, being literally in the same room with him, which was odd because he had the grand piano just banging away, and that was like in the middle of the tracking room. And the drums were like off where the piano should be. It was all about the piano. It was great. That was amazing.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was a highlight.
But now, let's just get right into the gear. There's so much stuff. I don't know if we're going to have enough time. You have a very special Les Paul with you right now.
This is a beauty, a black beauty, 1956, with the single coil in the bridge, the P90, and the Alnico, and the in the neck position, and it's just an incredible guitar, the Fretless Wonder, and I think one of the more versatile guitars ever made. I mean, you can play from big band jazz kind of stuff to, you know, Neil Young, you know, Crazy Horse, full on.
Yeah, that's so similar to, I think Neil uses one of those.
I think his has the Alnico, I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure it's got that in the bridge, and he has one of those Firebird pickups.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
In the bridge position. And it's a killer. This is one of my all-time favorite guitars.
Now, how do you define your tone? You have a definitive sound, and we're going to go through some of the different guitars and see where you get that. I know as a session player, you got to be really versatile. You got to do a lot of different things. But what do you feel is really defines you?
I mean, as a session player, I think where I've had more of a strength than maybe a stretch would be really playing in the pocket, really playing in the groove. You know, more kind of rhythm playing and textural kind of stuff is what I've mostly been hired to do. I mean, I've done lots of solo work and all that stuff too, but I find that I tend to, I just love playing live so much. So I love the feeling of really connecting with the drummer and kind of getting in that sweet spot. If I'm doing acoustic overdub, let's say, between that hi-hat feel and where the singer is singing and just kind of being glue. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I like to do.
Yeah. You know? Well, there's definitely an art to being especially a rhythm player, because you really do keep it together, but most people don't really notice it.
Well, that's the key.
Until you're laid out.
Right. Exactly. I like guitar parts that you don't necessarily hear, but you feel sometimes.
Right.
Like within the record.
So I have a question for you. So with your 56 Les Paul there, what is it about the P90s or those Alnico pickups that you like over, you know, because they're more famous for their humbuckers? I personally really love their P90s.
I do too. I find that, you know, the PAF and the humbucker, that's, you know, that sound that we always talk about, you know, Jimmy Page, Peter Green, whatever. But I some PAFs to me can be muddy, a little muddy sounding. And I find that these never get muddy. I mean, these, and the P90 is loud. It's a very loud, punchy pickup. And I find this very dynamic, that when you play hard, you know, it gives you the bite, but when you kind of soften up, it's still got this thick, big, beautiful tone, but it's not muddy. And then with the Alnico, it just feels, the only word I can describe is transparent. It's just such a transparent sound. You really hear the fingers on the neck, you hear the strings. And
well, why don't you give us a little bit of a demo? He's using a, what year is that, Princeton? It's 60s?
That is a, it's 65 or 66. And it's pretty original, I think. I don't know. I've blown it up a couple times, but so this is, you know, the gorgeous P90. Up to the Alnico, and it's a totally different instrument.
Sweet sound that Alnico is.
It's really warm, and it's just, it's got that thing you want.
Now, this type of guitar, what do you use? What type of stuff would you be more apt to use this in the studio? Can you give us a couple?
Well, yeah, this was like when I played with Jerry Lee. This was this. I think one of the tunes, you know, had a real like, and I just love that P90. I can just sit right in the pocket, and it's right there, and just. But yeah, for kind of that, you know, anything rock and roll is great. And I find this guitar I've used a lot, like when on the more heavy rock stuff, where, you know, you want to turn up the amps really loud and get the overdrive. It's very controllable. It doesn't get away from you, you know, in a tracking situation. It's very, very consistent.
Now, do you use this guitar for a lot of your leads?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why? More than like a Strat or something like that?
This is one of my go-to guitars for solo stuff, and one of my Strats is kind of a go-to, but you know, this makes you work a little harder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's such a clean tone. You know, you don't have the sustain of the humbuckers or anything, so it makes you work a little harder. But I think it's what you get back in tone is worth it.
Yeah. No, it definitely cuts. It definitely cuts.
Jason, we have a question actually from our chat room. They're asking, what is your go-to guitar and amp when you lay down a solo live or in recording sessions?
Well, I mean, my rig is basically, it's been the same for like 6-7 years, which is basically the 60, you know, mid-60s Princeton Blackface, Princeton Reverb. Then early 50s Tweed Deluxe. You know, I have a lot of each of these, but I have my favorites, but my 51 Tweed seems to be my favorite right now, Deluxe. And I basically just run them out of my pedal board, which is a pretty basic pedal board, you know, with the delay, distortion, overdrive, tremolo, roto vibe, you know, and a wah, basically, and a tuner.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty straightforward.
It's really clean and simple. We'll take a picture of it.
It's very, really very simple, and Dave at LA Sound Design does all my work. He's unbelievable. And I just plug basically my 67 Strat, or, you know, I play this guitar live all the time. My 56, I take it out all the time. I mean, I watch it like a hawk, but I, you know, going on the road, I wouldn't take this out. Playing clubs in LA, it's fine.
Now, playing live, if you were on the road, what would be close to this? What would you take?
Would take like, God, I mean, it's really hard to replace this, but I have a couple like early 70s Les Pauls that are really good, but they're with humbuckers, but really good sounding humbuckers. I have one in particular, I think it's a 72 that I really like. And then I like I have a Duane, which is a Pilot series from Gibson, a 58 reissue, 59 reissue, with which is a replica of Duane Allman's guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the best reissue Les Paul I've ever played. So that I'll take out.
Okay.
I mean, if it gets stolen, I'll cry, but I won't.
But you're able to adjust for the humbuckers as opposed
kind
to...
Kind of, yeah. This rig is so stable now, like how I have my rig sounding, that even I can kind of go between this and the guitar with humbuckers. Mm-hmm. I don't have to change
anything. You never tried like a 70s or one of the reissue gold top with the P90s that they made?
Yes, I have. They're great.
Oh, okay.
I just don't happen to have one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so picky. Like, I've found, like, on paper, the guitars that I would love to fill in my collection many times, but they just don't play well, or it's got to sound great, play great. I don't care if it's original. I don't care if it's a Frankenstein, as long as it sounds great and plays.
That's, the studio logic. If
right.
it sounds good,
right.
Tommy Tedesco, you know, he would bring in some just really cheap Japanese guitars, but it worked for the session. That's all he cared about.
And if there was ever a studio guitar player that would know, it would be Tommy Tedesco.
Yes, yes, true. Now, you brought several different guitars in. Do you want to do something real quick with this guitar and we'll go on to another one? Because
sure.
I want to see how you use the different guitars and how it affects your sound and how you judge what to use on a session.
Awesome. So, we're still on this 56 Les Paul, and I'm going to turn on a couple pedals and just, you know, kind of give you a vibe of... Even though this is not a humbucker, it kind of...
It's getting that sound.
Getting there. And what we're hearing it through now is my Way Huge was a great pedal company. It's called the Camel Toe, which is basically a green rhino and a red llama. Those are the two pedals that they basically put into one box, and that's what this is.
Yeah, that gets that. It's a
you know, so that this is basically you're hearing the green rhino sound. Thank you. kind of get out there pretty quickly with this guitar, you know, with just a couple simple effects through that.
Yeah, he just kicked in a TC Electronics delay and with the camel toe, which was really nice. Nice sound.
You know, it just kind of becomes a little more modern of a tone, like, really quickly. And
okay.
So that's why I love these vintage instruments, that you could still kind of get. It hasn't changed that much, really.
No. Well, it's amazing because the technology is old.
Right.
And it works. And if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the other guitars. You have a Dotnick 335. What year is that?
That's a 59.
59.
Completely original. Bought it from Norman Harris, as this one I also got from Norman. And we should break that one out, that 58.
And now, what do you use that? What will you pull that out for?
That guitar is such a statement sounding instrument to me that it would not ever be, like, if you said you can play one guitar all night, it would never be the 335, you know, to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just for what I do, because it's just such a big, you'll hear him, it's a big monster tone. And but mostly I would play that in, you know, a more heavy rock vibe, you know.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, like, when I, heavy rock to me is like 60s rock. Like,
okay.
I'm not talking about like, you know, like Linkin Park or something like that. I'm talking more like, you know.
Well, the thing is, now, how long have you had this guitar?
This guitar, this was, I would say, I probably had about 8 years.
Oh, okay. Because I know when I was back in the late 70s and especially in the 80s, a lot, that was like the session guitar. I remember Lee Ritenour used to use that all the time, and Larry Carlton.
That's it.
And it was the studio guitar. I mean, everybody wanted that sound.
You know, and one thing I have to bring up right now is, for those of you that aren't in this room, unfortunately, you cannot smell, but the smell of this guitar is amazing. It's just this amazing vintage wood smell. I don't know.
There's something about an original guitar in the original case. After, you know, 50 years, it starts get a little, it's got its mojo.
That's true.
I don't advocate anyone smoking anything, but if you could smoke this smell, it would be good. I shouldn't say that, but anyway.
But you should go down to Norm's and just hang out there, because he has so many of them. It just permeates to the whole room. There's some beautiful guitars.
It's crazy. Every time I go to Norm's, I run out screaming, either get me out of here because I'm not buying it, or I can't believe I bought it.
Yeah. But did you back when you were doing sessions in like the 80s or so, were you using a guitar like this more, or you were using like a Strat?
I didn't really get into collecting. I was mostly, it was like I had kind of a Strat and Les Paul. That's what I kind of learned early on watching all these guys come through my uncle's sessions. Mm-hmm. It was like you kind of needed a Strat and a Les Paul to cover your basses as a session guy. So I always had a good Les Paul and a pretty good Strat, but I didn't really start getting heavy into vintage guitars until about 15 years ago, 12 years ago. I mean, I always loved them and lusted after them, but that's when I started being able to acquire more of them. And but what I found is I got better gear, then I also started getting better sessions, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was interesting, you know, like once you are able to kind of get a good sound. I learned a lot from just people coming up, just watching what they did.
Right.
And trying to emulate, to steal, I should say.
I remember I was doing a session, an engineer named Ted Brinson. He had a studio over in on Washington in Arlington, and he hand-built this studio. It was a lot of blues acts there. Question Mark and the Mysterians played there, and I think Them played there.
Really?
Because he had signed pictures there. And I was a little guy. I was like, this is like really early. I was like in eighth grade, and I used to do sessions back then. And I walked in, and you know, I didn't really know some stuff. There was some blues cats there. And one of the guys had a 345 and an old Tweed bassman. I had no idea back then. I mean, I remember seeing it. And, you know, they had just finished their session. They were just kind of talking, and it was great. I totally innocent. I walked, hey, let's jam. And they just looked at me like, okay, kid, let's see what you got.
Oh, man.
I was fair, but it was funny because the tone the guy was getting. And he was using either a 335 or a 345. It was a beautiful sound.
Yeah, there's nothing. I mean, check this thing out. They're incredible. It's full on PAF heaven. Smoky, fat tone. There's nothing like it. So, yeah, this guitar is just incredible. And even that big G
just rings.
I mean, it'll ring all day and all night. Quite versatile guitars. I mean, but for me, just I don't know. I when I bring this to gigs, I usually play it on three or four things and then kind of move on.
Yeah. No. When you get that fat of a sound, I used to get that out of my Les Paul Custom, and it had the humbuckers on it, and you can layer it. You know, you could do like double leads and stuff like that. But when you start playing power chords,
yes,
and it just gets thick fast, and it's hard to.
I mean, in this position, just. We're out of a tiny Princeton amp, and then I love this sound where you put it in the middle position and roll off a little bit of the neck pickup. And that's almost my go-to always.
I remember in the late 70s, early 80s, that setting, basically, with a phaser, was like the sound.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, there's nothing like that guitar. This is a beautiful one. We got a chance to play them before the show today, and these necks, it's just amazing. There's a reason why everybody wants these guitars. These necks are just amazing. They're just beautiful.
Now, let me ask you, Jason. So when you buy a guitar like this that's all original, and this one is clearly in just some crazy condition where there's just hardly any checking on it, it's just amazing. How do you feel comfortable knowing that this is all original? Do you trust where you're buying it from, or do you yourself investigate the heck out of it?
Well, I mean, I'm very paranoid about that because I know enough about guitars to know that I don't know everything about guitars.
Right.
So I'm very, you know, and I've been tricked by great copies and thinking they're the real thing. I mean, it sounds and plays good. It's good guitar. Okay. So it's definitely about trust. You know, like Norman is like a personal dear friend of mine. So I know anything from Norm is good. And anything I don't get from Norm, I can bring to him or bring to Toru Nitono, who's my luthier that I work with. And who's amazing. And, you know, Toru will just look at a guitar and in 4 seconds find 15 things with it that I didn't even know were issues. You know, not necessarily bad for playing of the guitar, but maybe vintage.
Now, when you're looking at a vintage instrument yourself, I mean, what are like the first couple things you look for just to kind of give yourself a gauge of, okay, this is all original or it's been tweaked, but, you know, hey, it doesn't matter. It sounds amazing.
I mean, the first thing I try to do is look at the finish. You know, I try to just look at the finish in different types of light.
Mm-hmm.
And look at the checking and just look at just every possible area that might have, you know, weird overspray or just who knows what. And, you know, generally you can kind of tell if a guitar is... I mean, I've played all these vintage reissues and none of them, you know, once you sit with them for a while, you can kind of tell it's not truly vintage.
Mm-hmm.
It's close. Right. I mean, it's close as you can get. But
plus it doesn't have that smell.
It doesn't have the smell. It doesn't have the smell, and it just doesn't have that funkiness.
Frankly, if they made an air freshener, I would put that in my
old
car.
Guitar.
Old guitar.
50s and 60s.
You know what? You're on to something, man.
Patent pending.
Yeah, exactly. Hold the presses, man.
And I just want to remind everybody, we're getting close to when we're going to give away the Eminence Governor Speaker. So if you haven't yet, visit our website, www.flowguitarenthusiast.com. Register super fast, and good luck.
How much time do we have?
We'll do it at 30 minutes after. But you'll hear the rock and roll from Mr. Mike Matthews, as long as Jeff has got it queued up.
And then we'll
be announcing the winner. And then also just to mention, if you guys want to call, we'll be opening up the phone lines to speak with Jason, ask him any questions. 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. Call him. Ask him what you want to ask. Harass.
I want to be harassed.
Okay, getting back to the guitars. Okay, so you use this for very specific things. Should we go to the Strat?
How about the Gretsch?
Let's go to the Gretsch.
This
is a beautiful guitar, too. Now, again, we'll have pictures of all the stuff that we took before the show. Now, what do you use this guitar for?
This guitar, I mean, I never go to a session without it, ever. It's always a go-to. So anything that you would want that Gretsch sound, you know, at all. And I like to play it live. It's definitely a very, very specific kind of tone.
Now, you talking about sessions, okay? Obviously, if you go to a session, you know the guy, and you're going to bring a specific guitar because you know exactly what he wants. But let's say you're getting called for, like, a jingle or a demo. How many guitars do you bring, and what do you bring
if it's, like, just to be covered, it's basically my 67 Strat, which is a Frankenstein guitar, which I love. That's just the go-to Strat. I'll bring this guitar, this 59 Gretsch. I'll bring two Les Pauls, you know, one with humbuckers, and then one with, and then I'll bring that 56.
Mm-hmm.
Usually that'll cover me there, and then, you know, capos, slides, all that stuff. And then in terms of acoustic, I would bring two acoustics, basically a Martin D28. It's like mid-60s Brazilian.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Really, really, it's an unbelievably perfect recording guitar. Like, it's a perfect. It's just there's not one problem with this guitar. And then my new obsession is that 42 Southern Jumbo I was talking about.
Yes, you were telling us about that. You don't bring any 12 strings.
I rarely do.
Okay.
But I have, if I know who it is, and I know they may want it, I'll bring, I have a 64 Ricky 12 string, which is great. And then I actually lately, when I have to do 12 strings. I hate playing 12 strings. I just said it. But when I have to do 12 string, I use I like my Fender. Like Jimmy Page.
Oh, okay.
That one is great. It's like a mid 60s.
Yeah, the it's like a Jaguar or Jazzmaster type of shape. I forget the model, what it was called.
I forget
called.
It too, but it's a great tone. I mean, but totally non Rickenbacker.
Yeah, I have a Ricky. I've used that a lot. But I have a couple acoustic. Do you have any acoustic 12 strings?
I have one that I love. I have a Martin, which is just stunning. Okay. Yeah.
Now that's nice. Okay.
We did have a question from the chat room asking, what is the one guitar that I think is you're still trying to get? On your short list of must-haves.
That's the best question of all time. That's my favorite. That's the question that keeps me up every day.
And if you happen to have it, then you should call in and try to make a deal.
No, I've been having people calling me with... I've been getting horrible emails with pictures of wonderful guitars. Well, I mean, the only guitar I don't have that I, you know, and you all already know what it is the 59 Gibson Les Paul standard.
Right.
You know, I have two friends that have them, and one who I get to play it, and I literally play two notes on it, and I just put it down. It's that good. I just don't even want to. I don't even want to know. And I would think, you would think, like, there's such hype about that instrument, but there's a reason why.
Oh, yeah.
And I played probably five in my life. Out of the five, four of them were life-changing, brilliant guitars. One of them was like, it was just...
Norm's never called you and said, hey, Jason, I got this...
Well, Norm's got a 60 right now.
He's got the 60. He'll never sell it. He'll never sell that guitar. But, you know, I mean, they're just so ridiculously expensive. They're incredible, you know. I mean, it's just, I remember the first time they were at 50 grand, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, really?
Okay.
Rock and roll!
That's Mike Matthews.
All right, so let's see here. I'm going to close the comments and see who the winner is.
For an eminence.
Brent Stewart.
Brent Stewart. Welcome. Good
yeah.
one.
Congrats,
man. Mr. Brent Stewart, congratulations on winning the eminent speaker. We'll be contacting you very shortly after the show.
Should I play Mike again? Sure.
Why not? It's good time.
Rock and roll!
It's too much fun. Anyhow.
Okay. We're just... Our comedy is simple. Okay.
The best kind.
Yes. Now, let's get to this Gretsch, which is a beaut. I'm in love with it.
Yeah, if any of my friends out on the Gretsch pages are listening right now, you guys should be listening because you're missing out if you're not. This is a fantastic Gretsch.
Now, what year is this, Jason?
This is a 59.
Now, this guitar, I'm describing it while he's playing. It has the fake F-holes, the false F-holes, which I didn't know they made them that early, but that's interesting. But it's the wood is beautiful, and the back is a solid piece. It's not like I have a Gretsch Nashville, and the back has like a little pad, and you can open up the back to access the pickups. This guitar is just a solid wood back. It's just a beaut.
Is the bridge there
now? Is that bridge locked on there, or is that move?
Well, I mean,
because it's a metal bridge, which I've never seen before.
It does move when you beat it up a little, but I've gotten Toro glued it down pretty hard.
Okay.
It kind of gave me problems for a while. Like, you can't beat up on these like you can on a Strat. You just can't. You can't hit them.
Yeah, no.
So hard. But
mine, it moves. I put a tunematic, just put a whole tunematic assembly on there because it had the roll bar type.
Oh, yes.
And it just, I couldn't get
those,
it to temper.
Yeah, float all over the place. And, but, yeah, this guitar, it just stays in such great tune also. And I, you know, I mean, I was beating up on this whammy, and it's...
Tone
forever.
Is just nice.
Yeah, this is a very special instrument. And when you turn this sucker up, like when it's in my rig and it's like cranked, it's incredible. And weirdly, this guitar, more than any guitar I ever bring out to gigs and stuff, people talk about this guitar afterwards, like, what was that? Blah, blah. You know, people that don't know guitar,
mm-hmm.
and even more people that do know guitars,
mm-hmm.
tend to really dig it.
Now, you, besides the typical Gretsch sound, have you ever, what's the most unusual gig that you actually use it and it worked? That wouldn't normally be something you would think you would use a Gretsch for.
I have used Gretsches in like some pretty rockin' kind of like with the Dirty Knobs, my band, Mike Campbell. Sometimes, I mean, mainly I play that Strat, but there were times when I would play this type of Gretsch and turn it up really loud just to make sure to get the feedback in check and
mm-hmm.
incredible kind of rhythm, fat rhythm tone you can get.
Where, oh, okay.
You know, not doing rockabilly, not doing, you know, country, but just doing some serious like pumping rock.
Because it has a nice when you have both of the pickups in there, it's a really nice sound. I'm just wondering if you ever used it on a funk session or something, because it's It's not as heavy as a humbucker.
You know,
it's a little
funny you said that. But I have a white Falcon. I have a 58 Falcon.
Okay.
And I've used that on a funk session, and it was, I mean, I kind of did this vibe with it. You know. Because I thought it cut a little more than a Strat, you know?
Right.
I think, you know, just different types of pickups react
right
these effects so differently. So, yes, I have used, not this one, but on my
Because on my Nashville, I used it a lot for, it wasn't as hot as a humbucker or even a P90, but it was a little ballsier than a single coil Strat or Fender pickup.
And a little more unusual.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
That actually sounds good. That's a good little tagline.
It's a great sound. Okay, that's really interesting. But this guitar, you'll have to take a look at the pictures that Scott will post up on this. It's beautiful. It's really nice.
It's definitely one of the prettier. I mean, the wood, the grain on it is just stunning.
What's the difference between this and your White Falcon, do you think?
Well, the White Falcon's thicker, bigger, and I have a White Falcon without a... mine does not have a Bigsby on it. So it's got the fixed bridge, and it's just... I don't know. This feels a little more of... I don't know. I don't know how to... More Gretsch-like, even though they're both Gretsch guitars. Like, this is more of the stock.
Well, is it more the playing of it, of the playability, or the pickups pretty much the same?
Pickups are, I think, identical.
The sound is pretty similar.
But the sound of the White Falcon is just... It's a little angrier. It's like a... It's a ballsy... It's an incredible tone. But it's like a... It's like, you know, deciding to drive the big Cadillac. Whatever.
Yeah.
You know, through the city. I'd rather like have something more nimble for most of my rides.
No, that's a great net. Now let's go head over to the we're gonna go to your Strat.
Yeah, let's break up the
this is his go to Frankenstein. Pretty much your versatile all around guitar.
It's my favorite guitar in the world in terms of just it's certainly not the most collectible, although I think it is rare because 67 Strats are rare, and if I'm not mistaken...
Yeah, it's interesting because it has the old sticker on it, the decal, the Fender Stratocaster, but it's a bigger headstock, and which I've only seen a couple of times. I think a couple of Hendrix pictures I've seen stuff where we've had, you know, that he had the bigger headstock but with the older style. But it looks like a B-style neck. That's what it feels like for me. Which is a narrower type of neck that was popular in the 60s, even though this is the 70s.
Well, this is actually a 67.
67, okay. So.
And in terms of this, well, this could be fake. I don't even... This guitar is...
Oh, okay. That's possible.
I know. I'm pretty sure it's a Fender.
But the neck is... It's a B-style, which was popular in the early 60s. That's what I saw most. Most of my friends that had Fenders, they would... Oh, this is nice.
And these pickups are not Fender pickups. I don't know what they are, but I think they're from Japan. And Toru put... we went through several pickups. Probably three incarnations till we got to these. And the whole idea was that I could... It was based off that Black Les Paul where I would play that, plug this in, and not have to change the settings on my amp. That was my whole...
Oh, okay.
That was the whole idea behind these pickups, and then they're great. Balanced tones.
Yes, for sure. Now, he has the regular tremolo on it, but he has it all the way down flat, and he's not using any type of whammy bar. He's using it just straight out. And he has four springs in the back holding it back, so it's not moving. But it sustains a lot.
It's got a lot of tone, and it's thick. I mean, it's not... what I love about this particular Strat is it's, you know, in either recording or live, it doesn't ever get that shrill sound that you can sometimes get out of a Fender, which, you know, for whatever my picking style tends to be a little percussive anyway, so I don't need so much.
Yeah, well, you're getting a good, like, you were doing some chicken picking, and you were getting that squonky type of sound, which is really nice without all the, I know what you're saying.
Exactly.
A lot of the Strats will squeal, and it's kind of hard to control it.
So would you say that, is it a fair statement to say that this is your go-to guitar when you go to studio work? This is it. It gets everything you're looking for most of the time.
It never goes anywhere I don't go. Like, whether I play a gig or a studio, always, always. And the other thing is, like, I know how to get a sound out of it when it gets weird, when things get weird. And you know how it is. Like, not every gig is different. Everything, amps don't react the same every night or every, you know. I mean, I've had my rig worked on at times, then go into the studio, and then suddenly you have an issue. Like, you don't know why, and what you can normally rely on, you can't rely on. At least with this guitar and a couple others, I know they're not going to fight me back, you know.
Right.
The elements may, but the guitar won't.
But you were mentioning, too, that some of your clients, they expect you to bring this guitar. You have to bring this.
This guitar, I get a look when I don't play this guitar with a couple different people, so I just bring it.
Well, that's really versatile. That's a great... do you have any other Strats?
I have a lot of Strats and a lot of Telecasters, yeah. I mean, I have a 60 Strat with the slab board that is just, you know, unbelievable Strat. I have a 65 Sonic Blue hardtail, which is incredible. I have 66, which is really nice, and I know I'm forgetting another Strat that I have that's really
cool. So you tend to bring the Strat. When do you use the Teles?
A lot. I mean, I use the Teles, you know, it's funny. I have more Teles than any other guitar I own.
Really?
And I maybe use them the least. But I love, my first electric guitar was a Tele, so I love that.
So you'll bring the Teles live, that's one of your live guitars?
Yeah, I always bring a Tele as a backup to a Strat.
Okay.
And my go-to right now is it's a player, it's a 55, and refret, refinish, but original everything else, and it's feather light guitar, and punchy and wonderful.
Do you have any Teles with Bigsby's?
I don't.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Probably my cool. I have a 59 Tele,
uh-huh.
which is on a slab board 59, which is the most evil sounding Tele I've ever played.
So that's a great gig guitar. Okay.
And then I do five. I like to do the Keith Richards five string thing sometimes, and have the open G. And
now, you don't bring any other Strats, or do you bring other Strats with you as a backup? Or just
sometimes. Yeah, we were bringing that 67. Oh, I have another 67, that's right, that I just picked up. And the Teles. Oh, I have 10 Teles, I just found out. I didn't know that. Dee just told me that.
How many Strats? I think
he said six Strats.
Actually, step up.
Dee is here.
Dee is...
Dee Del Nero. She's a manager. She's a road manager. And a taskmaster.
Great.
You do have a couple I haven't seen.
That's true.
So I'm thinking he has between Strats and Teles about 10 of them.
Okay, for both.
So, but he has some that are in other places that I haven't physically gotten a hold of yet.
Have you ever played Jazz Masters or Jaguars?
Love. It's funny. I had a Jazz Master for a while and I ended up selling it. I know.
I felt an emptiness in the force.
It was a refin, so I'm allowed.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
I'm allowed. And it just didn't end up being, it was my only, well, no, one of my only eBay guitar purchases, and it just wasn't, you know, my other eBay guitar purchase is a keeper forever, 52 Les Paul. Yeah.
With all these vintage Strats and Teles you have, how do they compare to the vintage reissues that Fender's doing now?
I think Fender's doing a pretty amazing job right now. I got to tell you, I think what's going on in the custom shop is just stunning what they're doing. And I've met some of the master builders, and these guys are crazy. They're just like, they'll go to no end to make it good. So I think the quality is beyond what I thought it could be. But I think that when a guitar has 30, 40, 50 years to age, and it was hand-built and built right and played, I find the guitars that are played tend to age better. I don't think anything can compare to them.
Yeah, you still have to break them in, I think.
They got to be broken in, and they need to have that tone going through them and open them up, and they just get better. I mean, this guitar, this Strat's a way better guitar than when I bought it 12, 15 years ago.
Is it heavy or light?
Super light.
So
super light.
Must be the wood's either dried out or the moisture's come out of it.
That's alder, isn't it?
I think it is alder.
Yeah, alder's pretty light.
Usually one of the things they claim is one of the reasons that makes the vintage, because the moisture comes out of them.
Exactly. I mean, I've heard all these different theories. I believe them because I've seen the guitars and played them over the last 20 years and watched this stuff happen, and they just get better.
Now, have you tried, and we had, before earlier, we have a Taylor in here that we had you play. That's one of the newer ones. But have you used any of the other new ones or tried anything? Because I know a lot of guys that use Les Pauls in the studio, especially, or Gibsons, they tend to go to Paul Reed Smith for live. Have you ever done that, or did you ever
I love Paul Reed Smiths. I think they're great. I think my favorite new guitar out there by far is Duesenberg. Mm. I'm a huge fan of those guitars. I think they're incredible. By the way, that Taylor that you guys showed me is amazing.
T3B.
It's a very impressive guitar.
Do you want to bring that in? Do you want to
play? I'd love to hear it through the rig.
Yeah, let's bring it in. Yeah, you can give them the specs on this guitar.
Yeah, it's a Taylor T3B. It's their semi-hollow body guitar. So it has a Spelly back, curly maple top. It has, they call them the high-definition pickups in it that are split coils. Has a Bigsby on it. It's ridiculously nice. It has an ebony fretboard. So check out check out my YouTube page and our Facebook and website, and you'll see pictures of it and see Jason playing it. So he's just getting it set up and tuned up.
You can even hear how it resonates just as he's tuning up right now.
Yeah, it's one of the loudest, you know, electric guitars out there. And the one thing that's really cool, you know, most likely was intentional, but it's very cool, because I have a couple guitars that do split coil. When you split coil and go to the middle position on this guitar, it sounds like an acoustic. So maybe Jason will show that here in a second as he gets it tuned up.
That's kind of crazy, that tone it gets. I'm dying to hear it through.
And it's the typical Taylor neck that just plays immaculately. It's beautiful, the wood. This is incredible.
Yeah, it's a stunning guitar, and it's aesthetically it's beautiful, and it's it feels like, you know, like a new vintage guitar, weirdly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that sounds so good, just not even plugged in. I mean, what a tone.
Yeah.
This trick is great that Scott showed me. It's hard to believe that's all coming out of one guitar.
Yeah. Now he just put the full pickups and he had the split coil. And now he's back into the full humbucker mode.
Wow, wonderful guitar. Unbelievable. Very impressive. That's a wonderful tone. For layering kind of guitar parts.
It's just got a full, it's got a lot of, it's rich in harmonics, but it's got a nice, full, rich sound to it. And the cool thing about these guitars, and hopefully we'll be able to demonstrate this on, Scott will do a video on this, the pickups are set up so you can replace them. You just plug in new pickups. So they have like, these are their standard humbuckers with the split coils, but they have like an Alnico pickup that you can just plug in. They're real easy to plug in. They, you know, snap in there real easy. So you can change the guitar to whatever you want, and, you know, hopefully there'll be even more pickup combinations.
So Jason, we're coming close to the end of the show here. Just want to ask you, where will you be playing live next? Are you got any live gigs coming up here locally?
There are a couple gigs. Dirty Knobs are going to be playing in October, I think, in November. I'm not sure the dates yet. And I'm all excited about my new band, Cece and Jason. It's a duo. And Cece Sherman is an amazing singer, and she plays acoustic. It's mostly like acoustic stuff we're doing. Mm-hmm. We're playing where are we playing, D? The Mint or the Joint or both?
You're playing at the Mint on 9/19, and you're playing at the Joint on 10/24.
They're both Thursday nights.
And for those of you that haven't seen, if you go to our Facebook page, or our website, I'm sorry, you will see a picture of Jason playing at the Joint with Keith Richards, I believe, right?
That was fun.
So, can't really complain there.
That was fun. In fact, I played, you know what? I played the Country Gent that night. The Gretsch.
The Gretsch.
That's the guitar I played with him. It was very cool. Right.
And just want to mention, too, jasonsinead.bandcamp.com. You can check out his album with Ape. I think it's called Ape and the Wall of Questions.
Yeah, there's a few records on there. One I did about 10 years ago, and then 5 years ago, and then a more recent EP. Just go to jasonsinead.com, and it'll automatically sends you to that.
And then on Facebook, it's Jason Sine.
Yes.
So you can check out Jason and follow him, which I definitely would recommend, because you're going to see pictures of all these great guitars.
And Jason, would you mind playing us out when we go out, once we end the show?
I would love to.
Okay. So instead of playing the closing music?
Sure.
And just to mention, for our guest next week, we have coming up the legendary Steve Hunter. So speaking of Gretsch guitars, Mr. Steve Hunter, one of their biggest endorsers. And then after that, we have John Five the next week on 9/12.
Yes, he'll be coming right into town and right here.
He's amazing.
Yes. And Norm was telling me about him. He's a great tele picker.
Unbelievable.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks,
we'll definitely have you on back. We're just going to have to bring some of those teles, and we could do a whole show just on his acoustic guitars alone. So it's just amazing. But thank you so much, and everybody have a good night. Jason, take us out.